Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to A State of Wealth podcast. I'm your host, Saida Brown. A State of Wealth is a podcast on real estate, digital currencies, and generational wealth. It's great, great, great to be here. I'm so happy that you decided it not robbery, thought it not robbery, as they say in church, to tune in and to listen to today's episode. This show actually started as back in the days, Life Remix Radio, and then it went to the Cy Brown Morning Show, where it was the Cy Brown Morning Show for years. And we launched on June 26, 2008. That's crazy. It is now July 14th, 2021. So that was 13 years ago I started my first podcast. So I guess you can say I've been doing this for a minute. If you'd like to listen to some of the older episodes of the Cy Brown Morning Show, you can go to iTunes. I think you can actually go to A State of Wealth and scroll down and you may see some of the episodes. I will say my absolute favorite was when I had the opportunity to interview the late, great Tina Marie. And she prayed on the show. She talked about Rick James. That show, I will never, ever, ever forget that moment. And when she transitioned, it was such an emotional day for me because we connected so well. But it was a good day. That was a good show. One of the best shows I've ever done. Some were not so great when I first started. Nobody even knew what a podcast was. But the beautiful thing is that we are here. And now I spend my days recording and talking about wealth, generational wealth, real estate. I'm a real estate agent with Sotheby's, licensed in New York, New Jersey, and North Carolina. And I just feel like as time has passed, we have to really take a look, particularly as Black people. I'm not saying people of color because that's a little too encompassing, but Black people that we look at what we're leaving our subsequent generations. What are we leaving them? What are we leaving them? What world are we leaving them? And how do we frame the narrative where we can talk about money without feeling intrusive, without making people feel uncomfortable? You know, I was on Clubhouse yesterday. If you're in Clubhouse, definitely follow me and I'll follow you back. I was in a room on generational wealth yesterday in Clubhouse. And we were talking about the need for succession planning and talking with our elders about life insurance and wills. And it was a calm room, but it was a room like, how do you have those conversations with your grandmother? Like, Nana, where's your will? Nana, where do you want to be buried? Nana, where's the insurance policy? And we have to destigmatize. Oh, we ain't talking about that. You know, two things that came out of that conversation yesterday that were extremely profound. One person said her family didn't want to talk about insurance because they felt it was going to make you die faster. I was like, wait, what? Talking about life insurance is going to make you die faster. You know what's going to make you die faster? Eating shitty foods all day and not exercising. That's guaranteed to make you die faster. Talking about life insurance is not going to make you die faster. Not exercising, eating fat back and shit like that, that's what's going to make you die faster. Not taking care of your teeth so you can get the proper nutrition in your later years will make you die faster. But talking about life insurance, I'm a science person and I believe in data and stats. Nowhere can I see where having a conversation about life insurance is going to make you die faster, unless you truly believe that which you speak, you manifest. But if that's the case, we're going to die anyway. So I don't know. I don't understand that one. But the other interesting piece that came out of this Clubhouse conversation yesterday, a gentleman said he and his three siblings sat down with their mom to talk about her final wishes. She wasn't getting ready to die, but you know, it's a conversation that needs to be had. And all four siblings had a thought about her end of life experiences, what the service would look like, where she would be interred, those things. The funny thing he said is they were all wrong. She had her own interpretation of what she wanted to be, what she wanted to happen. So can you imagine, listen to this. Can you imagine if this woman had transitioned and her four children are debating at that point what they want to see happen, all of which differed from each other, and her wishes differed from theirs. Like, that is bizarre. Five people, five different responses. And he said it was so revealing because at that point, they all had to have their own come to Jesus moment. And he realized that the importance, the actual importance of these conversations. These conversations are difficult. Nobody wants to have them. But we need to, because this is what happens. If we don't have these conversations, we end up having fish fries and GoFundMe accounts looking crazy as hell on Facebook and Instagram trying to raise money to bury somebody. Now, financial troubles or financial instability notwithstanding, okay, some tragic accident happens. I know when my mom passed away from ovarian cancer, we didn't have a lot of money. My mom's ovarian cancer treatments basically bankrupted our family. She made too much money. Well, no, she had too many assets because she wasn't working, so she wasn't making money. She had too many assets to qualify for any type of government assistance. But she wasn't indigent, and she wasn't indigent. So she was caught in the middle where she had assets that were not liquid. So on paper, she had too much. Cash poor because she wasn't working because she had cancer. So she didn't it was just like this maniacal hamster wheel, this hamster wheel where we're just spinning and spinning, trying to figure out how do we pay for treatments. Like, her whole day was spent trying to navigate this while trying to live. And at the same time, my sister was in her sophomore, junior, and senior years of high school. And by the time my sister was a senior, that's when my mom transitioned. But the point is, people shouldn't have to go through that. So we didn't have a lot of money. There was no GoFundMe or anything like that. We were able to make it happen. But the point is, I can see under certain circumstances where you do need financial support from others. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing. I'm not going to criminalize needing financial help. That's not what I'm here to do. But I'm here to make meaning of the need that we can do better. Blacks, we can do better. You know, I have fascinating conversations with friends of mine how at points of our life, millennials, Gen Xers can't put two nickels together. But somehow our grandmothers were able to go in the freezer, go in their bra, go in their sock and pull out stacks of $100 bills or at least stacks of 20s. How? My grandmother and grandfather never, ever, ever saw the wealth that I have seen. Yet they owned a home, they owned new cars, they lived what? Like, there's something to be said just about having money conversations. I will say this, and let me tell you, on this podcast, The State of Wealth, you're going to hear me talk about a lot of my personal experiences just helping others and helping my own family navigate these tough conversations. I was interviewed for Essence Magazine. I'll see if I can find the article and post it up on estateofwealth.com where I had to have a difficult conversation with my mother-in-law when she was transitioning. Well, when she fell ill. And I remember I said to my husband, we need to talk to your mother. Like, we need to have these conversations about what's going to happen should something happen to her. Now, we knew something was going to happen to her because it was abundantly clear her health was starting to fail. Luckily, I have a very good relationship with my in-laws, as did my husband. And so when I first broached it, it was very difficult because I'm the daughter-in-law and she has four daughters. My husband has four sisters. So I kind of felt uncomfortable having these discussions, but I'm married to the oldest. So it's like, if something should happen, the burden is going to be on my husband because he is the oldest. So I don't want to be caught with my pants down. So let's start having these conversations now, much to my husband's chagrin. He didn't want to, but I didn't care because I'm not going to have something happen to my mother-in-law. And now I'm stuck trying to figure out what to do because you didn't want to have that conversation. That's we're not finna do that today. that's not how this is going to work. So what I did was, when I personally realized in that sobering moment that her health was failing, as an outsider, there were things that I was able to see that my husband and his siblings just did not want to accept. They didn't want to see it. Whatever it is, I saw it. And so in these rotating conversations with her and visits, I would ask a probing question and just let her talk. How do you feel about X, Y, and Z? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? And over the course of the subsequent few years, I was able to get, she shared with me all of the necessary information that I would need, my husband would need, and his siblings would need, and my father-in-law would need for a proper, thoughtful, an expedient transition experience. Because that should really be our goal. A thoughtful, expedient, and peaceful transition experience. And so meaning, that means when someone transitions, we shouldn't be running around like chickens without a head. So I started compiling a binder. And I actually have considered putting this, you know, for other people, the steps that I took and putting it in some type of a workbook. And I may do that. And so when we received the call, we hopped in the car. You know, they lived in a different state. The very next day we met with the funeral director, and we literally could have had the service the very next day. Like literally, like hands down, it's done. Now, obviously you can't do that because people need time to process and grieve and get there and get their thoughts together that they've just lost a loved one. But on paper, we were done. And that's because I asked a series of questions over a period of time and just gathered the information. Really simple, just gathered the information. And so when that moment of transition came upon us, we were prepared. And some family members, I will say, looked at us with the side eye, like, why they gotta be there? How do they know that information? She didn't tell me that. Well, because it was a deliberate and concerted effort to not be caught with our pants down. And I think that's kind of where I wanna go with this whole estate of wealth concept, blog, podcast. Like, what is our state of wealth? Which is why I created the estate of wealth concept. Because we want to make sure that we're not looking crazy in these streets when someone passes away, when there's a family emergency, when there's a financial crisis. Like, there's all these things that Black people, I can't speak for other races and when their customs and cultures, I know how Blacks get down. And that's the point, my point of view that I'm coming from. Opinion is what you think. A point of view is what you think, but based on data and facts and stats. So I will always give my point of view. And if I'm giving my opinion on this podcast, I'll tell you, this is my opinion. But most of the time, I can tell you it's going to be Saida's point of view. Today, I want to talk about the top five tips for coming out of COVID. And these are things that I've learned on my own, discussions that I've had with people. How did we survive? You know, right now, I remember I was at All-Star Weekend February of 2020 in Chicago. First of all, it was bitterly freezing. I love people that live in Chicago. Big shout out to Dion Williams of D. Williams PR, a very good friend of mine. She's in Chicago. Child, I don't know how you did it. I have cousins. My husband's cousin's first cousin and his family are in Chicago. It is cold as hell in Chicago. Well, hell is hot in theory. But anyway, Chicago was just cold. And so I was at All-Star promoting real estate in my athlete relocation and global relocation business. And we were all packed into parties, living it up, you know, our president at the time, the other guy said, it's just something, somebody coming in from China, whatever. This is like the second or third week of February. And everybody, you know, went back to their lives. You know, you got settled, start making follow-up phone calls. It's now February, the last week of February. And on March 7th, March 8th, we started getting warnings like this is getting pretty bad. And by March 11th, it was a Wednesday, they were going to shut Jersey City public schools down. They were talking, the teachers had to start making packets to send the kids with the kids home in case they shut the schools down. And at that point, we kind of knew, yo, this is serious. And on Friday, March 13th, they shut New Jersey down. I'll never forget that. Friday, March 13th, they shut everything down. We couldn't go outside. Other parts of the country were still open. I don't, you know, whether they believed it or not, that's not the point. But I will tell you this. In Jersey, they shut shit down. We couldn't go outside. I remember our trainer, our last workout was that Monday. So was that 13th? That was the 16th. We worked out Monday at 6 o'clock p.m. for 30 minutes, and he had to shut down. And so at that point, we couldn't spend any money. Maybe it's shallow of me, but, you know, as a money person, as a financial person, I'm always looking at the money, follow the money. And we were stuck in the house. You know, we all went food shopping. We did what we had to do, stacked our house. We didn't know how long we were going to have to hunker down. And I went and got my hair done and I got my nails done because I said, you know, we could ride this out for like a month. You know, you get acrylic or gel or whatever you get on your nails. You know, you can push it to a month, not knowing it was going to last months. But anyway, so from that point, we didn't spend any money. We couldn't go outside. You had what you had in the house, and pretty much that was it. And so as time began to pass, more people started transitioning. You know, I was spared. I don't think I know anybody that personally died from COVID. I know a few people transitioned, people died, but, you know, maybe three or four people I know have gone on to become an ancestor over this last like 15 months or, you know, 16 months, but I can't say that any of them died from COVID. Now, there are many people that cannot say that. They know a lot of people that died from COVID-related, you know, causes. I personally can't say that, so I was spared. But even in that sense, everything was just shut down. And at that point, I'm now hunkered in the house with my husband and two adult sons. Woo, what fun was that? But we start to evaluate what's important in life, where we place our values, what has meaning. And I hope I don't get eviscerated on social media for this, but I will say I'm not that mad it happened, because I think we needed a reset at some point. You call it God, call it universe, call it the natural order of things. I think we were getting out of control with the spending, with the values, with things going left. This is right before George Floyd, but you know, it sucks, and I'm not going to diminish or take away the havoc that COVID has caused in our society and to our global citizens and our brothers and sisters across the world. But I can say for my family, we got to know each other. You couldn't spend money to fix things. I couldn't, you know, I was more thoughtful with my children. You can't just say, here's $500 or here's $100 for your birthday. You had to put thought into it. And so my birthday is April 29th. And once we got shut down on March 13th, I was like, well, I'm turning 49 next month. I'm going to plan my birthday party. And those of you that know me know I have a roller skating party every year. I've been skating since I was a little kid. And so I was planning my 49th birthday party. I'm like, 6 weeks, psh, we'll be out of this. We're going to party. We're going to be at the skating rink in Newark, New Jersey, and have a good time. Well, as we approached April 29th and the world was still closed, but actually some places were still beginning to shut down, I was hurt because I couldn't have a birthday party. I know we have to put things in perspective. But the reality is this. I looked up and I said, I had more money than I thought I had. And it wasn't that I earned money, because we couldn't go outside to earn money for those people that work outside the home. But it was because we couldn't spend anything. So the money I would have spent on my hair, which y'all know I have a head full of hair. My mama had more hair than I did. I have a head full, and it is thick and it is long. So that's a process in and of itself. Couldn't get my nails done. Couldn't get my toes done. So that's $80 plus tips saved. And living and partying and socializing in New York, you know, we would go out 2-3 times a week. Just, hey, meet me at so-and-so, meet me at Red Rooster, meet me in Brooklyn. That's $40-$60 each time. So let's even say $50 a week, twice a week, over a period of 6 weeks. That's a lot of money. It's $100 a week. $600 over a period of 6 weeks, plus hair, plus, like, I can't say I had an extra $1,000. I definitely didn't have that. But the point, you understand where I'm going with this. We all woke up weeks later and realized we had more money. Now, that is not to say people that lost jobs, they didn't have any money. I mean, as a real estate agent and an agent and a strategist, my money stopped. Like, oh, it's gone. Bloop, no more. Rental property income gone. You know, those type of things, we definitely suffered. People suffered. But on the flip side of that, we did not know how long this was going to last. And financial gurus are always saying we need to have 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses. And this is why. We didn't realize that this shit can really happen. And it happened. And people were caught unaware, as they say. Now, what do you do? Food banks were running out of food, churches. And then to top it off, we couldn't go outside. So it's not even as though you can just go to a food bank. We couldn't go outside. Now you have no food. It was just, you know, this whole COVID thing was just a mess. But even coming out of COVID, where does that leave us now? Like, okay, hard reset, boop, hard reset. Where does that leave us now? And I think the first thing that I did, and again, this is after conversations with other people from all walks of the socioeconomic spectrum, people that don't have, all the way up to people that I know that are balling, and then people kind of in between like me. What did we do now? And what do we do now? And so that's how I compiled this really short top five list. The first thing I recommend, and I had to do this too, is write down every expense and your income. Write it down. Just write it down. There's something to be said about writing things down. We keep things in our phone. We have all these digital gadgets. Write it down on a piece of paper so you can see it. Pick up a pen, pick up a pencil. There's something about this mind-body connection when you're actually writing things down. And when you see it on pen and when you see it on paper, it becomes, in my opinion, it becomes more real and sobering. This is what my finances look like. And I mean, write down everything. Get it out so you know what you're dealing with. The second tip is to reduce your expenses. This is what a lot of people had to do, and I did it too. You make an assessment of where I'm spending money every day. I was able to, as others, to kind of begin to hoard money, and this is what made banks and continues to make banks very, very nervous. And this is why I think they're changing the credit rating in September. We're going to do a whole nother episode on that. But people began hoarding money because of they didn't know what was going to happen. And there's a large group of people that did not, there was a continuity of income. They did not stop working, but these stimulus checks began to flow. Money started flowing into the economy. And people were hoarding cash. Not only were they hoarding cash because of an influx of money, but they were hoarding cash because they reduced their expenses. Cable companies saw record number of losses because all people need was internet. But this is something they should have seen coming anyway. You know, I said when businesses closed, if businesses closed during COVID, there was a high likelihood, restaurants and service businesses notwithstanding, that their business model was fragile anyway. There were some entities that I was dealing with pre-COVID that failed miserably. And it's because the business model was compromised. I didn't have a good business model. COVID hit and that business went smashing to the ground. So there's this fragility that permeated because it was consumer confidence. And there were, you know, businesses such as these cable companies and digital companies that felt they couldn't be touched were. Look at the auto industry. One little missing chip, probably a 25-cent piece that couldn't be manufactured, kept new models coming off the showroom floor, which has now caused the price of used cars to go through the roof as high as 40 to 60% because people can't get their hands on new cars because of the delays in chip making and parts coming from China that are needed to complete a vehicle. So now used cars are flying through the shelf. Used car dealers can't keep cars in inventory. People need to drive. But anyway, I digress. Going back to reduce your expenses, use this to build up your cash reserves, if you can. And a lot of people can. You know, I don't want to believe to some degree, oh, we ain't got no money. This and Blacks are still spending. We're still spending. We are still spending. And I'm not saying, oh, it's PPP money and all of this. Blacks are still spending. Go into your Facebook timeline. Again, there's a small portion of people that are really destitute and are really hurt. And for those, my prayers and thoughts go out for them, as well as donations to organizations that can help those who are indigent or found themselves in an unfortunate situation due to COVID. But the reality is we got money and we need to reduce our expenses. Third thing is increase your income. I remember when this whole gig, well, I've been a gig worker pretty much my whole adult life, as musicians and other people have too. They go from job to job, gig to gig. It was called a gig. And it was frowned upon. It was really, really frowned upon. You know, I say this often that I remember years ago, my grandmother would tell people, you know, would tell me, well, what do I tell people at church that you do? What do I tell? I was like, Grandma, tell people that I work. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom for years. And, you know, I work little side things to keep money coming in. And my grandmother was like, I just don't get it. I know, because I didn't go to a job. But now the stigma of, if you know, before, if you were an entrepreneur, it means you weren't employable. You couldn't get a job. And now that's the thing. Like, they're celebrating working from home. They're celebrating, yeah, I got my own company. I work for myself. Whoop-de-woo. But when I was doing this back in 1997, 98, the early 2000s, the mid 2000s, it was like, wait, what? You don't have a job? I remember one of my friends said, well, what are you going to do for your 401k? I don't know. I'll be all right. It's just kind of funny how wow and how mighty have the tides and the winds blow in a different direction. But increase your income, learn a new skill, get some side gigs, build up your side hustle, and seek financial help. Listen, let me be clear. You know, I ebb and flow in my thoughts and I ebb and flow in my words. But there is financial help out there. Government help, community help, even bank help. Banks have actually, let me give you the top ones. I'm going to post them on a state of wealth under today's show. Capital One, Citibank, Chase, PNC, Wells Fargo, Truist, Bank of America, probably a couple others, have programs. You know, banks have been perceived as our enemy. My grandmother told me we used to have to get dressed up if we were going to the bank. You know, now people walk around in sweats and t-shirts. Not the same thing. But the point is, banks are not the enemy. We want to think of them as the enemy because of overdraft fees and things like that. But if you build a relationship with a banker or with your bank, there are programs. You have to probe and you have to ask. If you're unemployed or you don't have money at this time or your money is funny at this time, use this as an opportunity. Your day job then becomes finding out what programs and opportunities are out there to help you make it through. As a real estate professional, I can tell you the moratorium on evictions is getting ready to end. I'm recording this show on July 14th, And as I understand it, by August 30th, the moratorium pretty much across the country is going to be lifted. The states that I'm licensed in are the states that I keep my eyes, you know, peeled on the most, which is New York, New Jersey, and North Carolina. But other states, it differs. But when this is lifted, it's going to be the wild, wild west in evictions, people needing places to live. Try to pad yourself now if your finances are still fragile, if you have ways to increase your income, just to build a little cushion. But I will say this, there is help for homeowners and there's help for landlords. Because think about it. I'm not a landlord, but I didn't want to be. My mother had tenants and it was a nightmare trying to get them out when they stopped paying the rent. So that was, and that goes back to what I was saying about, you know, when she was diagnosed with cancer, when they looked at her on the balance sheet, she had assets, but they were not liquid. And then you have these assets where your tenants don't pay rent. So now you become underwater. It was just a nightmare. But the point is, landlords were screwed in this because they couldn't put people out, which is morally not good anyway, but they couldn't put people out. But they still had mortgages to pay. So it was just like a real dicey situation. And it is. And so I understand from the landlord's perspective as a real estate professional, you need your money. Run me my money. But what about the tenant? Nobody thinks about these people that now have had to homeschool their children. They can't pay their rent. Like, just emotionally, oh my God, this is a mess. Just do what you can to increase your income. Number four, do not panic sell. All I'm going to say is hold on to your investments. You know, a lot of people's portfolios have seen wonderful, wonderful and tremendous gains through COVID. You know, I've said this on Facebook and I've said this for years. I said it in 2008 during our financial crisis, and I've said it over the period, over my adult life as a studier of economics, finance, and how money moves. Wealth is acquired in down markets, period. That is a fact. That's finance, banking, money management 101. Wealth is acquired in down markets. Stocks fall, people buy it, they rebound, they make a ton of money. Wealth is acquired in down markets. If you don't take anything away from today's talk on the top five money tips coming out of COVID, just remember wealth is acquired in a down market. And we have just been in a down market where you could have bought things for a song. You don't believe me? Look at AMC stock. How about that? For those of you that own stock in AMC movie theaters. But anyway, don't panic sell. If you see gains, let the gains ride out. Now, if you're, of course, in a financial pinch, you need to you need to get that money out. Do so to pay bills to stay afloat. We don't want anybody not paying rent and they're sitting on all this cash in investments. But at the end of the day, don't panic sell. Don't freak out. Let the money sit there. Let it ride out. Let the market level itself out. Let it do what it does. Do what it do, baby. And ride it out. Like, let the market correct itself. There will always be market corrections. It's kind of like how God works. Everything always works out for the good of those who love the Lord. Just let the market correct itself. It will. I mean, even we're looking at the real estate market right now. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen. You know, with these houses right now, there was a shortage on wood at one short point. And housing got stalled. But there's this mass exodus from these cities with people being able to work remotely. They're moving to larger places. Home has a new definition. People that are in New York City paying $3,500. I know somebody right now paying $7,500 a month who lives in the Lower West Village, which is pretty much where I grew up. I grew up near Washington Square Park, right on Bleecker Street. But those rents are really, really high. He pays $7,500 a month, has a great job in the city. And he's like, Sai, I can't keep doing this. Like, that's bizarre. That's a lot of freaking money. But people are making these mass exodus. They're making a mass exodus from these expensive cities because they're able to work from home, moving to where they have more space. You know, I feel badly for people that have roommates in New York City where you may have a small two bedroom, your rent $6,000, you're paying $3,000 to have a roommate, you have a small living room, and now you're both working from home. How in the world do you do Zoom calls like that? I mean, it's just nuts, but don't panic sell. Hold on to your stocks, hold on to your investments. If you can, and if you need to, get some of that money out, pull some of that money. If you need to liquidate some of those assets and pull money out to move or to have major life changes, then go for it. You are the fiduciary over your life, and you and your financial advisor know what's best for you and your circumstances. But just let the market correct itself. And the last thing I want to share, which is a really, really, really important tip that we don't talk about enough, is review your life and health insurance policies. With people changing jobs, your health insurance can change, your life insurance can change, your life insurance needs may change. And all of this affects your mental health. Mental health. I am so happy that Taraji P. Henson and athletes are making a concerted effort to destigmatize the need for mental wellness. Like, we need it. Americans, I can tell you, let me just go off the lines. Let me color outside the lines for a minute. You know what it's like to, you know, I've been with my husband for over 31 years, but to actually like live with him and your adult children, that shit was grueling because there's no escape. Normally, you know, there's a little tension in the house. You know, I'm going to go out. I'm going to go to the gym, work it out. We could not. And I just, as a mother, remember I told you I was a stay-at-home mom for years. So I stayed at home and raised my children. So when I say I want my freedom, I want my peace, I want my space, I did. And it was mentally draining because now I found myself back in mommy mode, breaking up fights between my, like, we cannot underestimate the need for mental health and mental wellness. Get your mind right. Like, whatever you have to do for your own self-care and your own mental wellness, I mean, barring anything illegal, of course, you need to do it. And here's the thing. This is where the trick comes in. Here's the rub. The things that we did, particularly women, I'm a woman, I'm not a guy, so I don't know what guys do, but I know for me, when we need a break, we go to the spa, we go get our nails done, we go get our hair. We couldn't do those things during COVID. So we had to figure out other practices to increase our mental wellness that did not involve money. You heard what I just said? Listen to that. What can you do for yourself to improve your mental wellness that does not involve money? That's the secret sauce of happiness. That's the secret sauce of your life. That's the things that you have to do. That's the core. That's where happiness resides. What did he say? What did Darrell say? Where the money reside? Where the money reside? Your happiness resides in a place where there's wellness and peace that doesn't necessarily involve spending money. Your soul doesn't care about money. Your soul doesn't care about superficial things. You know, in church we used to sing, "It is well in my soul." What does that really truly mean? And I think COVID, this COVID experience, traumatizing as it may be, forced us for a personal reconciliation with our values, with what we believe, and truthfully with who we are. So I encourage you to take these top five money tips, write down your expenses, write down your budget, reduce your expenses as much as you can, increase your income, don't panic sell, and take care of your health and your mental wellness will really get us to a better place. It's simple, but it's not easy. Simple, but it's not easy. And a lot of this data, especially about the banks, the resources that the banks provide, will be in today's post on Estate of Wealth. If you're listening to the show after, you can go to Estate, E-S-T-A-T-E, like real estate, Estate of Wealth, and go into the search bar and just look up top five tips for coming out of COVID or COVID, whatever word you resonate with. And this post should come up and all of the resources will be there. So thank you so much for listening. And always remember, we shall pass through this world but once. Any good, therefore, that we can do, or any kindness that we can show to any human being, let us do it now. Let us not defer or neglect it, for we shall not pass this way again. Thank you so much for listening to A State of Wealth. I'm Saida Brown, and I'll see you in the next episode.